We're going to continue our study here, picking up where we left off last week in Acts chapter 27. So if you want to follow along, you can head over there to Acts 27 now. Last week when we started this chapter, we finally got out of all the courtroom drama with Paul, and now we got into some action with the storm at sea. We've been following Paul. He's on his way to Rome. He's been falsely accused in Jerusalem. He's made an appeal to Caesar, which is basically appealing to the Supreme Court of Rome. And so in this time when they were transferring him along with a lot of other prisoners to Rome, they encountered this vicious storm out at sea, and it was threatening to sink the ship and everybody on it. It was a dire situation for them. And as we read that account, we compared that event to the chaos that life so often can dish out to us in the circumstances we face. And we looked at how the actions of that ship's crew could actually mirror some of the responses that we have at times of trouble, the ways in which we sometimes will react to the difficulties that come our way in life, troubles that seem like life storms that we go through. And so we talked about how, just like with them, we tend to sometimes drift along with the trouble when it comes. We get shocked into inactivity and just kind of roll with it. We begin to see ourselves as defined by it. And then we will sometimes try to take control of the situation like they did when they were tying the hull of the ship together. We'll sometimes think, if I can just control everything that's going on here, I'll be able to fix this and solve this. And when that doesn't work, we tend to get a little religious, like they did. They started clearing the decks, and we'll go through and kind of in a superstitious response to God, just start looking for all the things that we think are somehow displeasing him and getting us into this jam, which then finally, at least that final stage that they went through, is that they finally gave up trying to do this on their own. They finally gave up, realizing that their efforts were not going to save them. And we talked about how so often that's where God is leading us in these hard experiences that we go through, to that place where we're willing to let go of this ourselves and allow God to do his work. And so we talked about how those troubles are often the things that God is using to develop patterns of trust in him. And those patterns of trust are those things that are leading us into a wholeness in life. Those are the things that are putting us back together as real human beings. And so we left off mid-story last week. We kind of left it dangling there. And we're going to pick up today, and we're going to continue this same theme of looking at some of the parallels that we see in circumstances in life and our responses to them, and what God is hoping for in those responses in our experiences. And you know, this real storm that we're reading about as well. So when we left off, Paul had just stood up in the midst of this big storm and talked to the crew and the soldiers and everybody on board and saying, you know, be of good cheer, basically. He's telling them, don't be afraid. I have faith in God. And that was a very encouraging note to end on last week. But the story continues here, and actually the storm continues on in this story as well. Because even though Paul had faith that God was going to take care of things, some negative things still tend to happen in this story. And that's so true in our own experiences as well. I mean, haven't you ever gone through something like that where you finally get to the place where you're really, you know, going to believe? You have some confidence that God's going to take care of the situation, but everything still keeps going bad. The problems still continue or persist, and sometimes even gets worse. Even though we believe that God's going to deliver us, that doesn't necessarily give us an out or an automatic out of the situation. So continuing on from last week, let's look at what happens and let's see how we can make those applications to our own lives in the experiences that we go through. So if you're there in Acts chapter 27, I'm going to pick up where we left off last week, starting with verse 27. It says, when the 14th night had come, so there are 2 weeks out here going through this, we were being driven across the Adriatic Sea. About midnight, the sailors suspected that they were nearing land, so they took a sounding and found 20 fathoms. A little farther on, they took a sounding again and found 15 fathoms, so it's getting shallower. And fearing that we might run onto the rocks, they let down 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship and had lowered the ship's boat into the sea under the pretense of laying out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, unless these men stay on the ship, you can't be saved. The soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it go. All right, we'll stop there for a moment. I can imagine, you know, you put yourself in the different characters of this story. You have to do that. You got to try them on for size and see what's going on. And I could imagine easily that the sailors and even the crew, the soldiers are thinking at this point in time, 2 weeks out here being tossed around like this. I would be thinking, at least at this point, if I could just get to solid ground, if I could just get to land, I would be so happy. I just want land more than anything. And sure enough, they suddenly find some solid ground in the form of reefs. And so the thoughts would have changed. Oh no, there's solid ground out here and it's going to destroy everything, because, you know, that's kind of the way the thing goes. Because that's obviously the danger there. The boat's going to get stuck on the reef and then the waves are going to destroy the boats. That's just going to be disastrous no matter how you cut that. So they throw out anchors. They get themselves pointed in the current. They throw out these anchors to slow their drag against this, against the current, in order to delay their fate, to figure out what they're going to do next. And it's interesting that in verses 30 and 32, the sailors try to make their escape in a lifeboat. They're going to try, you know, they're at the point where, look, we're leaving the ship and the soldiers and the prisoners behind. We're just going to get out of here and bail on this whole thing. And when Paul gets wind of it, he tells the centurion about it there in verse 31, and he says, we're not going to make it if these dudes don't stay on the ship. Now, that little statement of his has incurred a lot of differing interpretations. A lot of people have tried to puzzle over what Paul was getting at. Why did he say that? Some have tried to assert, and I've actually heard it preached this way many times, that Paul was saying that this plan has to go exactly as God described it. This has got to go down the way God said it was going to go down. And if these guys try to change the course of it, then it's all going to fall apart. The whole thing will fall apart and it won't work, because it's got to go according to the way God said it was going to go. And usually that's said to create an emphasis on obedience from the text. And while we do want to be obedient to God, we're not trying to undermine that idea. That interpretation, again, smacks of a certain superstitious outlook to me, if we look at it that way. I just don't believe that God's sovereign plans are totally dependent on human ability to stick to them that well. Because if that were true, we'd all be in a lot of trouble all the way around. I believe that what Paul is doing here is he's pointing out the obvious. Those are the sailors. Everybody else on board is a prisoner or a soldier. Nobody else is going to know how to steer this ship safely into land. And so without them, this thing could fall apart very easily. I think Paul's just looking at, you know, this situation. And I don't think it's a lack of faith on his part. I think it reminds us of a very important principle. When it comes to trusting God in the times that are difficult and the circumstances that are rough, when trouble comes, we don't want to abandon common sense. We want to use common sense as well as faith in this. Even though we're trusting that God is going to deliver us, and even though, like we said last week, we're not going to take control of the situation and assume that all of our efforts are going to be the things that are going to fix this thing, that I, by my own efforts or my own ingenuity, can turn this thing around. We're not talking about that. Trying to save ourselves by our own efforts. But that doesn't mean we just sit back and fold our hands and say, well, God's going to work it all out, so I'm not doing anything. I'm just going to coast with this ship till it glug, glug, glug goes down. I'm not even going to think about the whole thing. No, while we trust God for his intervention in our circumstances, we'll still take the appropriate steps that present themselves before us as we're going along in life. We trust God, but we still assess the situation with a modicum of common sense and take whatever measures that we observe before us that we believe will stabilize the situation, all the while trusting that God's going to be the one who's going to deliver us. Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying in that? For instance, talking to a good friend of mine, going through a very difficult time with employment and things like that, difficult season in his life where, you know, he's not, the income isn't where it needs to be. His work has slowed down. Things are getting tight, and he's trusting God to provide for him what it is that he needs, trusting that God's going to provide for him to support his family. But while he's waiting on God, he's also filling out applications. He's making all the phone calls that are necessary. He's getting his name out there, doing the most obvious things, the common sense things that need to be done in order to secure that type of work. He's not, you know, we don't just sit back and just wait for somebody to call us saying, you know what, God told me you needed a job. Look, I mean, God can do that, and I'm not, you know, dismissing that possibility, but if we're sitting around just waiting for that possibility, we might be watching the ship fall apart when we actually should have kept the sailors on board. In times of trouble, we need to take whatever appropriate steps there that are indicated before us in order to stabilize our situation. That is not a lack of faith. That is not something that's undermining our trust. It wasn't for Paul. Paul saw what was happening here, and he took what steps were necessary in order to stabilize the thing as they're waiting for God's deliverance. All right, moving on. Verse 33. As the day was about to dawn, Paul urged them all to take some food, saying, today's the 14th day that you've continued in suspense. And without, I love the way he words that. You continued in suspense. That you've been freaking out and without food, having taken nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take some food, for it'll give you strength. For not a hair is to perish from the head of any of you. See, that would have been a great relief to my brother. And when he had said these things, I'm not even going to look. I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. I couldn't. It was a cheap shot. It was low-hanging fruit. I just had to take it. And when he said these things, he took bread, and giving thanks to God in the presence of all, he broke it and began to eat. And then they were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. We were in all 276 persons in the ship. You know, these Alexandrian grain cargo ships were actually quite huge in the ancient world, but they weren't built for these kinds of seas either. So that was part of the problem there. Verse 36, and when they'd eaten enough, they lightened the ship, throwing out the wheat into the sea. They were carrying this wheat. That's very important. Notice that's the last thing to go. That's the commercial value of the whole trip right there. So once again, we see this amazing response from Paul. You know, before he's standing there on this rolling ship saying, look, have faith. You know, I have faith. You'll be encouraged because I got faith in God. And I want so much to be like Paul in these situations. The storm is still going on. There's still a reef out in front of them. And yet in the midst of it all, he encourages the guys to eat something. And in verse 35, it says he takes some bread and he gives thanks. Just let that sink in for a moment when you think about where they are and what's going on. He takes his bread and he thanks God. Thank you, God, for this bread. While the waves are rolling over them and while the wind is still howling and the sky is still dark, thank you, God, for this bread. There's a principle here that we don't want to miss of thanking God for what it is that he's already provided as in anticipation of what it is that God is going to do for us. There's something to this. I noticed that all the guys got encouraged at that point. The circumstances hadn't changed in any of this at this point, and yet there's something about Paul's actions and words and what it is that he does here that actually encourages this 276 on board. And I think there's a principle that we learn here that when trouble comes, we can find peace through thankfulness, through being thankful for what God's already provided to us, thanking God for his provisions. I mean, I got to tell you, I have trouble believing in myself enough to think that I would respond like Paul did on this boat that's going down, thanking God for bread while you're on a sinking ship. That just seems, I don't know. It's easy to lose sight of what we already have when the needs of the present are so pressing on us, right? I mean, it's easy to lose sight of what God's already provided for us when we're stressed about what it is that we're lacking at this moment. Paul could have just tossed the bread aside and said, bread? We don't need any stinky bread. We need less reefs and more sunshine. We don't need bread right now. But he thanked God for that something tangible that he received from God, a very ordinary, very commonplace thing that he wasn't willing to take for granted, that God had already provided, that he'd already received from him. And that becomes impetus for his faith. To hold this tangible bread reminds him of what it is that God has already provided, and it inspires his faith to believe for what it is that God has yet to do in his experience, what God will provide in the future. Sometimes we need the grounding that comes from taking stock of what it is that God has already given to us. Sometimes it doesn't hurt when we're going through a crisis, when we're having a difficult time, when we're waiting on something that we really need the answer to. It doesn't hurt to take stock of what we already have, what God's already provided to us, the things that are going right. It's easy to get really, really focused on everything that's going wrong, but to take the time for just a moment and remember everything that's going right. Yeah, but not a lot is going right, Rob. Well, you know what? You've got enough air to say that. So that's pretty cool. He's started there. We can start there. We can start with those simple, obvious, mundane kind of things that God's provided for us that lends itself towards stability and peace in our own responses. Because it's hard sometimes to thank God for what we can't see. So it helps to begin with the things that we can. This principle of being thankful and grateful to God is a principle that's found throughout all 66 books of the Bible. There's something about this. There's something to this idea of thanking Him even in the midst of our storms. And it always carries with it the idea of bettering our attitudes, of changing our outlook and our perspective on these things. And listen, you may think, well, you know, who cares about that? But there is something to that. There's something meaningful and powerful in that change of attitude as to how it is that we're responding to these things. I mean, you know, the attitudes become better on the ship. It doesn't mean that the storm goes away. It wasn't like, you know, change our attitude, woo, all the waves are gone. No, things are still bad, but their perception of the situation is different. And that's important to us as human beings. We need that change of perspective on how things are happening in our lives. They don't turn around for the sailors. In fact, it actually gets a little worse here. Let's keep going now that we're kind of bummed out anyway. Verse 39. Now, when it was day, they didn't recognize the land, but they noticed a bay with a beach on which they planned, if possible, to run the ship ashore. So they cast off the anchors and they left them in the sea, at the same time loosening the ropes that tied the rudders. And then hoisting the foresail to the wind, they made for the beach. Again, Luke, man, he's really getting into the sailor stuff, isn't he? I mean, he is just like, he's got the lingo down. He's a physician, remember. Anyway, verse 41, but striking a reef, they ran the vessel aground. The bow stuck and remained immovable, and the stern was being broken up by the surf. The soldier's plan was to kill all the prisoners, lest any should swim away and escape. But the centurion, wishing to save Paul, kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land, and the rest on planks or pieces of the ship. And so it was that all were brought safely to land. All right, think about it. These guys are way off course. Remember, they were just going to sail around to the north of Crete. And now they're all the way across the Adriatic. It's very possible they didn't know they were as far as Malta. So that's why they don't reckon. They weren't looking for Malta, so it didn't look familiar to them. But what they do see is a bay with a beach, and that always looks promising, no matter what your circumstances are. So they head for shore, hoping they're going to be able to beach the vessel. But like so often happens, you know, a simple plan goes sideways, and before they can make it to shore, they do hit a reef, and it causes the front of the boat to stick in the reef, and then the back of the boat is just getting hammered by these waves, and so the whole thing is just being demolished before their eyes. And the soldiers' response to this is that they figure, well, it's time to kill the prisoners now, which is just a reminder to us about what the Roman army was like and the Roman Empire was like, because this is just a run-of-the-mill, well, this is the obvious next step. The boat is falling apart, so let's kill the prisoners. It's just an amazing thing when we think about the kind of environment that the gospel was birthed in and the difference that it made in this world. Because this is what Roman soldiers do. Roman soldiers kill prisoners. But again, God's in the mix, and the centurion likes Paul. We established that last week. There's something about the way Paul was interacting with him that incurred this guy's favor. Paul has the favor of the one who makes these decisions. And so because he likes Paul, all of the prisoners escape in this situation. All of them escape that fate. And it's really interesting when you puzzle through some of these things because, you know, I know that they were all claiming innocence. We know for sure Paul was innocent, but there's probably some dudes in there that were not innocent of crimes. Maybe dudes that were deserving of some sort of punishment, and yet God's grace through Paul covers the entire crew, all the people on that board, including the soldiers who were ready to kill everybody. Listen, This is a rescue plan underway by God. I'm sure that nobody thought it looked much like a rescue plan. This seems like a strange way for God to say, okay, now I'm going to take everybody home safely, so we're going to wreck this whole boat right here. And the whole thing seems to fall apart. But verse 44 just shines out. It's like a light splitting through those dark clouds that says we all were brought safely to land. And that is the bottom line. That's the bottom line to all of life, to everything that we're experiencing in this life, to everything that we go through. This is the bottom line. All were brought safely to land. God never promised that they wouldn't get wet. He never promised they weren't going to have to swim a little bit along the way, but he promised to safely get them to land. And that's in microcosm. In the larger story of our lives in this world, that's just what God has promised. He's promised to bring us safely home to shore, to a new world. We may get wet. We may have to swim a little bit along the way, but he will bring us home at last. We can trust him in that. We must trust him that there's a good ending coming to this story. Regardless of the things that we're experiencing now, this is leading towards something so much better. Parenthetically, I just want to point out, verse 44 says that they used planks to get ashore through the waves. And the word in the Greek is sanis, and it means a board or a long board. So I want you to put it together now, just for a minute here. There's these big waves and boards, and we can assume that you know, Paul is involved in this. Who really invented surfing, right? The Apostle Paul, obviously. Which means that surfing is the godliest of all sports. That's just biblical. End of argument. Drop the microphone and walk away. All right. Well, we're going to read some of chapter 28, and then we'll be done here. Starting with verse 1. Yeah, I know. But we're going to bring this back. We're going to bring this back into good focus here. Verse 1 of chapter 28, next chapter. After we were brought safely through, we then learned that the island was called Malta. The native people showed us unusual kindness, for they kindled a fire and welcomed us all because it had begun to rain. It was cold. When Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and put them on the fire, a viper, a snake, came out because of the heat and fastened on his hand. It bit him. And when the native people saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another, "Well, no doubt this man's a murderer. He's escaped from the sea, but justice hasn't allowed him to live." He, however, shook off the creature into the fire and suffered no harm. They were waiting for him to swell up or suddenly fall down dead. But when they had waited a long time and so saw no misfortune come to him, they changed their mind and said, "Oh, he's a god." Okay. I'll tell you something. You would think that Paul has been through enough, right? Think of everything that he's gone through. I mean, just in this thing, we're not even thinking about all the beatings, the stonings, the false imprisonments, all of the stuff that he's gone through. But here now he's gone through this storm and a shipwreck. That is enough for three lifetimes as far as I'm concerned. He finally makes it to solid footing. He's on this nice beach. There's a nice beach bonfire there. And then wham, all of a sudden, the old serpent jumps out and bites him again. And when the Maltese islanders see him get bitten, they superstitiously conclude that he's being punished. The gods are exacting their punishment on him. They want justice. They're like Job's friends in this instant. Anyone who gets through a shipwreck just to get snake bit obviously has it. There's some serious karma issues going on here that this needs to be addressed. And so they watch him. They know the island. They know the wildlife. They're the people that have grown up there. They know what to expect. They know what little snakes are hiding in the weeds and the woods and everything like that. So they're expecting certain things to happen. He's supposed to show the effects of the poison, and then he's supposed to die. That's just the way this works. And when that doesn't happen, they again superstitiously conclude, well, okay, he's a god. He's able to be above this. But what it tells us is their perception of him was that there is something different about this dude. Something's unusual about this guy. They were expecting the normal human response from Paul, a response to a poison, but it didn't happen, and that becomes a testimony to them. It's not fully understood from their perspective, but it's a clear indicator that something else is at work here that is not part of the natural world system. He wasn't a god, but he's a child of God. And that makes all the difference. And see, this is the thing. God didn't say we wouldn't face the same difficulties that this broken world faces. He didn't promise us that the serpent would never bite us. He never said that to us. You'll never get bit. No. But he did promise us that the serpent's poison wouldn't get us. In other words, that this serpent, that devil, his power has been removed. He cannot poison our hearts or our minds. And that's one of the things that creates the greatest distinctions between this new humanity God has created through Christ's death and the rest of this broken world. This is what makes the church, this is what makes God's kingdom stand out in this world. And we remind ourselves that when troubles come, they must not poison us. We must not allow troubles to poison us. This is where the watching world should see a difference in us, in our response to trouble, in our attitudes and on our heart reaction to the things that we face. When the serpent bites us with troubles, whether they're physical or emotional or relational or financial or whatever it is, whatever difficulty we're facing, do we swell up? Do we focus all of our attention on self at that point? Do we become the biggest thing in our world? Oh, if everybody knew what I was going through. Oh, you don't know what it's like to be me. Oh, woe is me. If we get bitten, do we curl up and let our hope and our joy die when we face those things? Or do we shake that snake off in the fire and remind ourselves, this trouble will not poison me. This is not who I am. These difficult circumstances that I'm going through, this is not who I am. This does not define me. I am a child of the God who loves me, and he will deliver me in the end. You'll see. I will not be poisoned by these things because there's more to me than just this snake attached to my wrist. There's more to me than that. Our response, guys, is what makes us different in this world. How we respond to these things. And I'll tell you, just like with Paul, it's going to be our loudest testimony to a watching world. How it is we react to the troubles that life dishes out. All right, well, finishing up, let's read verses 7 to 10 and we'll stop after that. Now, in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the chief man of the island named Publius, who received us and entertained us hospitably for 3 days. It happened that the father of Publius lay sick with a fever and dysentery, and Paul visited him and prayed, and putting his hands on him, healed him. And when this had taken place, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases also came and were cured. They also honored us greatly, and when we were about to sail, they put on board whatever we needed. And that's where we'll stop today. Here we've got this wonderful conclusion to this whole episode that Paul has had to go through in his life. Paul has this unique opportunity here to show off God's power to change life. All these people of Malta are ministered to because Paul's ship got torn apart by wind and waves. All of this good results from this very difficult situation. And I said last week, so often when trouble comes along, when trouble comes our way, one of our first questions, that impossible question that we pose is why? You know, why do I got to go through this? Why is this happening to me? Why do I face these sort of things? And listen, there's no fully satisfactory answer for why it is that Christians suffer, why it is that God's plan seems to travel through fields of suffering. There's no fully satisfactory answer to that, but we do see some hints in stories like this, like in Paul's experience here. The trouble that he faced led him to this particular time and place of ministry. And so that does inform us a little bit that the troubles that we face are often the things that are preparing us for the unique ministry that God has for us. Because we all have a ministry. All of us are representative of the kingdom of God. All of us have a part to play in this amazing project as God reveals his loving rule in this world. All of us have a ministry that we are specially prepared for, and so often that preparation takes us through some dark valleys along the way. It's often the very things that we've suffered that prepare us for what God's going to do through us to reveal his power and his love in this world. I've said it before, I've told you my story probably more times than you want to know it, but it's my story, and I don't have any other stories to tell, really, that are as meaningful to me. But there was a time in my life that I went through what for me was the worst life storm that I'd ever known. To that point, I've really not known anything quite like it since. I was cut adrift spiritually and relationally and emotionally and financially in so many ways. I was on the outs with the only church that I had ever known. And as crazy as it was still the only church I'd known. It was still my church. It was crazy, but it was mine. And now I was out. I was on the outside looking in. I was treated with disdain and suspicion and ostracized by people who at one time had been my mentors and my friend. Even while I was going through my own heartbreaking circumstances within my family, stuff that's still beyond my capacity to articulate. But I was questioning my faith. I was questioning things so deeply, I was afraid my own wife would never understand what it was that I was trying to say and express, much less my brother or any other person that was my friend that I thought I had. My own mom cut me off relationally. Completely, because we had differing beliefs all of a sudden. And then on top of all of that, I lost my job. I've got a family of six to try to support and no prospects of income anywhere that I could foresee. I mean, those were dark, dark days that I went through. All I could do at that time, and I've told you that before, all I could do was just whisper this thin hope that God wouldn't give up on me somehow. And the thing is, it was so dark, but I couldn't see you. I had no idea that just down the road from that dark circumstance, you were there. You were waiting for me. I didn't know that. I didn't realize I was being trained for a ministry of my own. I didn't realize that something so healing and restorative was just a few feet beyond that dark storm in my life. But here you are. And you make all of those troubles so worth it because of what we've experienced here, because of how God has worked to heal and mend and restore here. Arnold Roth, he's an editorial cartoonist. He once said, "Nothing bad ever happens to a cartoonist. It's all material." And in that same way, God says, "Nothing bad ever happens to a Christian. It's all ministry. It's all the stuff that he's putting together, stuff that he's going to do." So let's trust God in our times of trouble. When those life storms come our way, and like we said, they're going to come. If you're not in one, you've been through one, or you got one on the horizon, you see it coming, they're going to come, but let's trust God. Let's allow those things to shape us into the people of trust that he longs for us to be. When they break over us, let's determine to shake that serpent off in the fire. Let's not be poisoned by these things. Let's refuse that poison. Let's remember who we are and God's great love for us. Let's see how God is going to use those troubles we've been through to show off his great power and his great love in the midst of a world that so desperately needs us. Right on? All right, very cool. Why don't you stand up with me, please? God, we're so thankful to you.